Welcome to the Dividend Talk podcast, episode number 24, Dividend Taxation. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Dividend Talk. I'm your co-host, Engineer My Freedom, and today I'm joined with European DGI. This is a podcast where we discuss our passion for dividend growth investing with our own unique European flavor. If you're new to this channel, please hit the like button and subscribe to us and check out our previous episodes on YouTube and Spotify. See you on the inside. Hey everyone, we have an interesting topic for you today where we're going to be talking about dividend taxation. Taxation is probably one of those topics that not everybody likes, but we do have to accept it, and it's part of our investing journey. But we have a special guest with us today, Robin. He's called The Secret Investor. You'll find him on Twitter. Welcome to the show, Robin.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
So if you could just introduce yourself maybe for a couple of minutes, just to let our community who you are and what it is you do.
Yeah, of course. So, as you mentioned, my name is Robin. I'm a tax accountant in the UK. So at the moment, I have my own business, and I've worked in the industry for about 10 years. Like to sort of form a niche as a bit of a tax specialist. So I look after small and medium sized businesses, and I work for a large business in their finance team. And obviously from that, I do a lot of tax research and have to understand the rules around everything that I can. So hopefully I'll be able to help out a little bit.
Awesome. I'm really looking forward to this. Tax is one of these, for me, I always struggle with it. I do have an accountant. I've said that before, that really helps me, but I do try and understand as much as I can, because I like to know as much as possible. So I'm really looking forward to our main topic. Okay. So before we get into that, European DGI is waiting on the sidelines. How are you getting on, EDGI?
Really good. And I'm actually also really exciting about this topic today, because over the year, I've got so many questions about dividend taxation, whether we should consider it and how to do it and why we shouldn't invest in dividend stocks and such. So I hope that today we get the chance to at least uncover a little bit the mystery around dividend taxation and yeah, take it from there.
Cool. So we might start with the news of the week, and then we'll jump into some rapid fire questions for you, Robin, if you don't mind. But for the news, if you want to go ahead, EDGI, I know you had something on Shell, I think.
Well, I read an article this morning, a brief article, I think, from Royal Bank of Canada, where they were mentioning that Royal Dutch Shell is really the company now pulling Europe forward from a stock market point of view. And I found this really interesting, because I remember just 3 weeks ago, Royal Dutch Shell almost was left for death. Yeah, behind. Nobody wanted this stock anymore. Suddenly it grows 50% and the bank starts to recommend Shell after a 50% uptake. And this shows for me just the lucrativity in the stock market, and also from the big investment houses. I mean, if they really had the courage, they would have give a recommendation around Shell like at 10 euros and not now at 15 euros. So I find this always really interesting news. And I had a small conversation with Beurswolf the other day on Twitter, and we were talking a bit about Danone. And I told him, like, hey, listen up, Danone is now around 50 euros, 52 euros. Nobody wants it really, because, you know, it was at 80 euros in the beginning of the year. And I told him, I'm almost 100% sure that from January onwards, it will be for everyone the stock pick of the year for these large investment firms, because they only see uptake then. And this is for me always this where I would like to also share with the community, like, really don't take all the noise you hear from these investment houses. They are often pushing and pumping and dumping stocks. And it's up to us to stay clear here in our heads and really do our own homework for the investment case, and not jump on the bandwagon when a large firm just puts something out in a press release.
Maybe RBC read my blog post on Shell when they're at 11 euro and recommended it based on that. So I'm quite happy that that Shell are doing well. We all know that. I've been buying them since March, since the lows, and I've wrote a blog post about them. Robin, I don't know if you know the background, but I've been really pushing hard on Shell the last while. So I'm really happy to see that they are turning it around. It's still short term. There's still a long way to go, and I believe we might still see some more pain. I don't think they're out of the woods yet, but I'm still happy to see how they're progressing. But my news of the week is slightly more depressing. It's football related. We know we both love football. But one of the hand of God, one of the greats of football, Maradona, has sadly passed away. And what a player he was. Certainly from our generation, just even see him play and see people like that play football is incredible. So a bit of sad news, but I mean, it was incredible to see him play.
Yeah, so, and we made a small joke as well, right? That at least from a stock investing point of view, how it relates is that he probably was a good client of the pharmaceutical industry. So, I mean, yeah, but a great player, and we'll miss him.
Certainly. So this section, we will do our rapid fire round. So Robin, we'll ask you 5 questions. They're really simple. There's 2 options. And you just have to tell us straight away without really thinking about it what your answer is. And if you want to clarify something at the end, you can, of course. So, question 1. Maradona or Messi?
Maradona.
Light grey or dark grey?
Dark grey.
CFO or entrepreneur?
Entrepreneur.
Index funds or individual stocks?
Individual stocks.
Brussels or Washington?
Brussels.
Very good. Is there anything you want to expand on?
No, not really. I think they speak for themselves. I'm interested in the light grey or dark grey question.
apparently, and I only found this out just before we went on air, but apparently it's a joke about accountants. So they only know 2 colours. Or they only wear 2 colours, light grey or dark grey.
When I first got into the profession, the first thing one of my clients said to me when I went to visit them was he expected me to turn up in a pinstripe suit, a bowler hat and an umbrella.
And did you?
No, definitely not.
Okay, brilliant. So we might just dive straight into the main topic. It's about taxation, and we know that, I mean, you are in this field, but we must stress that this is not financial advice. Anything that we say or indeed you say, you still should speak to a professional in your own area. We'll answer as much as we can. We have a few questions here, and hopefully we'll provide some clarity on it. But again, if you seek further advice, make sure you go and see a professional in your own area. But we'll just get going on it. So the first question we really have is about double taxation treaties. I find them quite tricky to understand and read. So how do you normally read them? And do they use the same text in these treaties? And why is that?
So, yeah, they do use the same text. And the reason being they're all governed by international law. So they try and use common language to ensure adherence. But as you'll know, if you read any legal document, they are notoriously difficult to read. So double taxation treaties do follow that sort of path. I'd always say if you're unsure, to seek some advice in the local region of where that double taxation treaty relates to. Even if it's just going to one of your in your own region, speaking to a local accountant and seeing if they've got any knowledge of it and getting them to read over it, they shouldn't charge you for that sort of thing. It should be sort of pro bono work. So I would always recommend going and speaking to an expert. Same way, if it was myself and you wanted to approach myself, I'm more than happy to help in any way I can.
So Rob, how does this then work in a practical way if we look at these double taxation treaties? Because often they use the quote of 15%, you shall not charge more than 15%, even if a country has a higher tax rate. I know you're from the UK. Could you explain a little bit from an English perspective, let's say, if you see such kind of things mentioned in the treaty?
Yeah, so generally I'll go away and research the treaty even more, but I'll also research a bit on the internet, and the internet's a great resource to go away and look at other people's experiences using the same brokerage that I use. Generally, you'll be able to see. But in the UK, what we quite often do is we have a self-assessment personal tax return. And when you submit that and file that, you file to your governing tax body to say what tax you've paid on your income. Now, for foreign dividends, within that other country, sometimes if you're talking large amounts, it may be beneficial to speak to somebody in the local region who's a tax advisor in that region. So in the example, I'll use UK and US. If I was taking dividends from a large US company, I know that the treat is quite often, say, 15%, but I know that the brokerage will deduct 30%. So if I went to the US and or spoke to someone in the US who's a tax advisor and consulted them, they might say that by submitting a tax return in the American region, I could claim the difference back. There's also, on some brokerage firms, they offer forms. So I know that I complete a form on my brokerage to say what my tax situation is in the country that I'm purchasing the shares in. So again, that would be something that would reduce the amount that I'm getting deducted. But I would always emphasize, go and speak to an expert in that region. They should be able to give you advice free of charge on the basis that, in the hope that you'll become a client with them. And then in the US example, I'd file a tax return in the US and I'd be claiming back the difference between the 30% that was deducted and the 15% that should have been deducted on that tax return.
Okay, so if I would take that analogy, I live in a 19% in a country that charges 19% dividend tax, but the tax treaties often say 15%. So let's say I would deal with Switzerland, where the tax dividend tax is 35%. Then I have the opportunity to claim 35% minus 15%, 20% back from the Swiss government, as I understood it. But then I would need to file that in Switzerland, I guess. That's kind of the...
Yeah. Yeah. It's about seeking... You've got to have the two tax advisors in place, the one in the US, or the one in Switzerland and the one in the country where the stocks come from, who would both be able to advise you as best. But yes, in theory, you'd be able to claim back the difference, because what you're saying is, I've been charged this in that country, yeah, but I actually live in this country. It's foreign income, but it's being taxed already there. I shouldn't be taxed here as well.
Yeah. And then because of, I would, let's say, just hypothetically, I would get this 20% back. That reduces it, let's say, to 15%, but I still live in a 19% country. So then I would, in my own filing here, and this is what I actually do, by the way, I would need to still pay the additional 4% in the tax here.
Correct. Your tax return is there to make sure you've paid the right amount of tax. So if you're claiming back the difference, what they'd say is you're claiming back 20%, but you'd owe us 4%. And in the UK mechanism, the way that would work is when you file that return, they work it all out for you there and then. They say you've paid X amount, but you owe us this amount. So your total liability at the end of it would be X amount of pounds or whatever it may be in the currency.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. So my situation now here to share with you is like I've got shares in German companies, French companies, Swiss companies, Dutch companies, English companies, and let's say that in every country I might get an approximate amount of dividends of, let's say, up to 300-400. So for me, now I could go to every country and probably get 30 to 40 euros back in the end of the year. But I'm not doing it yet at the moment because for me it's not worth the effort at the moment.
The fees you'd pay would be in excess of that in the end, ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah, and then that's what I will do is next year I will try to do it myself. I saw that in Germany the forms are available and such, and you can log them in. And I will just try it without an advisor like that, just to feel how painful the process is and to gain experience. To understand also, like, if I want to scale up my investments, how tricky is this going to be?
Yeah, and that's a very good tactic, because ultimately you're not going to lose anything by trying, but you could potentially gain. The other thing is, by speaking to an advisor in that local area, you may be able to go back a number of years. So in the UK, for example, you can go back up to 6 years. So if you're going back, you might have some extra that you can claim back from past. As long as you've got records to demonstrate it, you should be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what kind of records are they typically looking for? Is it transactions? And is it just, do I need to have from my broker something like with a stamp on it, or is it literally I can just take a transaction?
A historic statement will be absolutely fine from your brokerage. It will show that, you know, it'll show the transactions that have gone into your account, and it is absolutely fine. It doesn't need to be stamped or authorized. It will show it on the brokerage. It'll show all the brokerage details on that statement. So you'll be fine from that perspective.
Okay, cool. And are you aware of, for instance, any legislation being worked on in the European Union, for instance, where they're trying to harmonize it or ease it up for retail investors?
I'm not aware of any, no. It doesn't mean that they're not, but obviously we're governed by certain EU laws, and I assume they just say it rolls up into that, even though you and I know it doesn't. Tax is a very forgotten thing, and it's never black and white. It's always grey. But ultimately, as an investor, you should not have to go out and claim your tax back. You should be taxed correctly in the first place. But unfortunately, that's the way it works.
Good one. Thank you. And this is maybe also a nice bridge, because you can hear already for myself that I'm kind of figuring it all out a little bit on myself. And there's, unfortunately, in the language that I live, I find it hard in Poland to read everything. So it's really hard for me. But what are, in general, the do's and don'ts for retail investors when it comes to dividend investing from your perspective?
Research, I mean, with any investing, research is key, but research into the local laws of where you're going. Don't just assume if you see a company with a 5% yield, you're going to get that 5%. You need to research what the tax laws around that are to ensure that you understand what you're going to get physically into your pocket, because that could go from 5% to 3% quite easily, and then it might not be such an inviting investment for you.
Really interesting. And this is one of the reasons why, when I do my calculation, when people ask me, I try to usually put in my blog post also what's the after yield, after tax yield, because indeed sometimes you see that it's significantly lower, and for me, still it might be a reason to buy the stock, right? But it's just like making a full informed decision, I guess, taking the tax impact.
It's that rounded decision. So when you talked about Shell earlier, you may be making that decision based on the fact that Shell is at a reduced price. And in future, you expect that investment to grow organically through the growth of the company. But if it was purely based on your decision for your future income, then you need to understand what after tax you're going to be getting into your pocket.
So going back to European DGI's statement earlier, where he was saying that he has unpaid dividend, he can claim dividend tax from X amount of countries, and he has yet to do that. When would it make sense to actually do that as a retail investor? I'm pretty sure there's other investors out there in a similar situation that are not reclaiming these taxes at the moment.
So again, I talk from the UK perspective. In the UK, we work on tax years. So we have a tax year from the 6th of April to the 5th of April the following year each year. And a tax return is done after the 5th of April. So for next year, it'll be after the 5th of April 2021. And it goes back through that whole tax year. So effectively, the period you would be reporting for from a tax purpose would be that 6th of April to the 5th of April during the year. So it makes sense any time after April to go back. I mean, you'd have to research the individual country and understand what their tax filing requirements are. Some work on calendar years, some will have their own individual tax years, but it makes sense to do it based on a tax year. So when we talked about a brokerage statement earlier, you'd be able to tailor that statement for the dates that you would need it for, to understand the transactions that you're going to be claiming back tax for during that time. That would be the best way to do it. And again, go back and seek advice of someone, of a tax consultant or a tax advisor in that country, just to understand what their opinion would be on the individual country basis as well.
And if you're looking for a tax specialist in that country, what's the best way to find someone that could be reputable, or that you could trust? Because it's quite hard when you're going into countries that you won't be familiar with, say France, and trying to find someone that you could trust to give you the right information.
So there's certain rules that I'd follow. Same as if you were going in, just imagine you're looking for anything within your own jurisdiction. You would maybe look on Google, you maybe follow some reviews. They should never charge you up front. They should always be open and upfront if they're planning on charging you for anything. And ultimately, like I've just said, they should be giving you advice for free. And if you're getting advice for free, you can go away, research what they've told you, and make sure that what you're finding out is matches what they say. And ultimately, that will show that their advice is not only credible, but they provide a good service. And with, as with anything, it's sort of you get a feel of how you feel about the person. Some people you will just get along with, other people you might not gel with, and it might not work. In which case, when it comes to personal tax affairs, and it's going to be an invasive process, knowing about all your income and things like that, I would suggest making sure you feel totally comfortable with that person.
It's good advice. So then, in terms of dividends that are paid out in shares by dilution, is that a taxable event for retail investors?
So in terms of getting, shares are treated as an asset. So there's a different taxation for that asset. So within the UK, we have what's called capital gains tax. So the capital gains tax, you get £12,300 tax-free. So if you bought an asset, and in this case, as we'll talk as if the asset was purchased for zero because it was gifted, if you sold that asset for over £12,300, you would have to pay tax on it. That's called capital gains tax. It's the same as if you buy and sell a house and make a profit on it, or any asset at all. So from that perspective, your tax changes which type of tax you're talking about. And again, that would come on a personal tax return. And it would be when you sell the asset, not the gift of the asset. So officially, if you were just gifted shares, you wouldn't be liable for tax at that point. You'd only be liable for tax when you sell it and you make a profit off it.
I'm actually jealous of your 12.3k tax-free in the UK. If you divide that by 10, that's what you get in Ireland. I think it's 1,250.
It won't last long after this. I think that allowance will be the first thing to go.
Make use of it while you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Where I live, I think there's nothing. And it's really interesting that you say it. So when there is, because this is what Shell was doing in 2016 after the oil crisis hit, they only started to pay out indeed dividends in shares via diluting. And I never considered that would be then shifting from my dividend tax bracket, let's say, dividend withholding tax to the capital gains tax. I've never sold those shares yet. It's really interesting. So it's not like what was written on the website there that you don't pay tax over it. It's true, but not entirely true, because you pay tax for it if you want to sell it and turn Correct. It into income.
Mm. Yeah, it's as if they've gifted you an asset for nothing. You're not making a gain off it, but once you sell it, you make that gain. So technically, they'd be tax liable at that point.
Well, actually, they've given me assets, but my own assets, because they have been diluting.
Yeah.
They've been watering down, how do you say it, diluting the share count with that. So it's actually, they are giving me back something that I owned already. And then say, be happy with it. And if you want to sell it, we you get taxed anyway, because it sounds like it's for free.
But do you guys get, I don't know if you guys operate anything like ISAs in your country. We have ISAs, which are tax-free savings accounts. I don't know if you guys have those at all.
No, we don't. We don't, yeah.
And in Poland, we have something like that, but I think for up to €1,000 a year or something like that. The issue there that I have with it is that I don't use that, because I cannot use it until I'm 65. And I would like to retire early. So that's also maybe one of the questions, like if you have an ISA in that case and you want to retire early, is it actually smart to put your money in there if you cannot access it? Let's say you would like to access it probably when you're like 45 years old.
So in the UK, our rules are much different. So if we have an ISA here, you don't have to wait until you're a certain age to withdraw it. I can open an ISA now. It's my money. It's just like a bank account. But effectively, it's all tax-free, and I'm allowed to put up to £20,000 a year into that tax-free. So it's free from, if I was buying something like Shell, for example, if it grew and it was worth £30,000 next year, I could sell it. I'd have no tax liability on that because it's within an ISA. And the same for the dividends. I don't get taxed anything extra on any dividends that I get. I don't even have to declare them because they're within an ISA.
So why would anyone not use an ISA then in England?
It's a very good question. The only scenario would be if you are a very heavy saver and you're saving more than £20,000 a year. That would be the only scenario. I invest through a SIP, which is a pension. That I can't access until I reach pension age. So that would be the scenario you're talking about. You have to understand that you're locking your money up until that time. Mm-hmm. That's quite a big commitment, as you say.
Yeah, that's what we have here. So why did Britain again leave the European Union? Because it could be good to implement some of those laws European Union wide. I would love to have an ISA.
Definitely. I don't know is the answer to that question.
To get a little bit to the practical stuff, like then, right? And what are really the biggest misconceptions that you see from retail investors?
The automatic rates applied are correct. So people just see a number and they assume that what has happened is correct. They don't ask the question as to why or take the time to understand it. So as you've mentioned, you're across multiple countries. It can take time. But ultimately, that time might be worth it to you to understand it, and it might be lucrative in the future. People not taking the time and just thinking that what's happened is correct can be costing them money, or not even taking the time to investigate further what might or might not be correct, and fully understanding what's happened to their money.
Okay. Because you're talking now here, for instance, about if I get dividends automatically deposited by my broker on my account, and they say it's, let's say, 20%. Is it really 20%? Should it not have been 15%? Or is maybe even the actual amount actually representing 20%? Is this what you're talking about?
Yeah, so take the time to look at the dividend voucher, look at your brokerage account, understand what you've been taxed. If you don't understand the amount you've been taxed, look why. If you think it might be wrong, then speak to an advisor and get some advice on whether it is correct. And if not, then you can look at how to rectify it.
Wow. You really triggered my thoughts now, because, I mean, I can't even imagine how a digital broker can do it wrong. It's just a simple calculation, right, that they configure in the software.
They use the worst case scenario, so they'll always tax you the maximum amount. To ensure that they're following the rules, but that doesn't mean that maximum amount is correct for you personally in your circumstance.
Wow. I have some homework to do this weekend, I'm afraid. Thanks for that.
So in terms of tax harvesting, do you think that it makes sense today, and how would you typically do it?
So now I have to be totally honest at this point. Tax harvesting is not something I'm massively familiar with. However, that's because I haven't had a lot of people that have necessarily gone through it. It very much depends on the individual and their circumstances. So it's down to you what your individual needs and circumstances are, and what the advice you get is in your local area or local in your country and the tax in that country. But I would always suggest, when you seek advice, that you want to use the rules to be as efficient as possible. So it's not something I'm adverse to. It's not illegal. You know, there's always, with tax, one of the things that people always go with is ethical and moral standpoint. But as long as you're within the rules, you're following them correctly, and you're seeking the right advice, you're not doing anything wrong. So my views are that if it makes you more tax efficient, then absolutely go ahead and do it, because ultimately we all pay tax. As you'll see with people like Donald Trump, some of us don't pay as much tax, but the reason they don't is because they have the best tax advisors, quite simply.
And the key then is just to stay within the rules. I suppose that's the key to that.
Seek advice, stay within the rules, but be as tax efficient as possible within those rules.
So I do it every year, really simple. If I've got capital gains, what I do then, I use some of my losers that I don't want to have in my portfolio anymore to sell them in December, so that I avoid paying capital gains tax with my tax return.
And ultimately, as you've mentioned earlier, your capital gains is massively different to ours. So within the UK, people would have less reason to, because they might be making small gains. Now, absolutely, what does happen is people will sell a limit what they sell within their shares or assets to ensure that they stay below the threshold that we give. What you're doing is exactly the same thing, but just reversing it because your threshold is so low.
Yeah, true. True. Cool. What would be your number one tax advice for someone like me or EMF if we really want to live off dividends as an early retirement goal? So not the 4% rule, but really living off of dividends as an passive income.
So given the amounts that we'd be talking about at those levels, I would absolutely think that getting a good tax advisor on retainer is essential in the local jurisdictions of which you're talking about. I wouldn't expect it to be expensive. As I've said earlier, the initial advice should always be free. They want you as a client, so they should want to pull you in and show you that they want you as a client. That's why that initial service should be right up their alley. That would be my first thing. Understanding your liabilities, as we've just mentioned, if you're talking about large dividends, you need to understand what tax you're being taxed. Now, I think, EDGI, what you said was, you said, I just, the digital platforms have to get it right. Well, that's the first thing I would say right there. Do they have to get it right? Or should you understand that they've got it right? And that's not a critique, but when we're talking those large amounts, that's what you want to know. You want to know that they have got it right, because that's your income you're talking about. So go away, research, speak to the right people. It's a time investment, not a money investment. And then once you get the right person, if that's a large amount of money you've got involved in that country, hire them, get them as a tax advisor and ask them how they will help you going forward. What are they going to do to improve your net income? Because trust me, when I say a good tax advisor should save you more than they cost.
And that's interesting, right? So let's say I would get tax advice for free. What is really the service that you think we should pay for? Is it like doing our filing, or what is really the services? Yeah.
The filing is the physical work, but then the ongoing understanding of the rules, changes in legislation, understanding your own circumstances. When something comes up, it may be that they think, right, that might apply to EDGI. I need to give him a call and say, right, I've got this piece of legislation here. This might help you out. What do you think? But also, your own circumstances might change. And just by the fact you've got that contact there, you might phone them up and say, okay, we had a chat a year ago. I want to use you now because I'm maximizing where I am in this country. And then they'll say to you, okay, well, yeah, okay, we can have a full-on consultation for an hour, go through your whole circumstance, but I'm going to charge you for that. That's more reasonable. Yeah. What I'm saying is the initial chat to understand what they can do for you, that should all be free. They should spend a good half an hour to an hour getting to know you and how they can help you.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks. So I have an accountant nearby, but I hope this person is not by coincidence a listener, but it doesn't really add value because they're focused on the filing and they don't understand international law. And I've been always struggling with finding a tax accountant that understands international law, specifically around dividend taxation. It's hard to find here. And I also wouldn't know how to find them, because if I do an internet search, I straight away get Deloitte, these big firms that are focused on multinationals. And I find it really hard to find those tax advisors that understand international laws and are focused on the retail investors.
It's a very niche subject. It's a very niche subject, and it will be hard to find. But I don't know any personally, but I would hazard a guess they're out there. It's just a case of finding the right one that fits for your circumstance.
I will keep looking for this needle in the haystack.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and just one final question before we wrap this up. And it's, do you think that taxation is worth considering, or would it influence you when making an investment decision?
Absolutely. So when I look at something as an accountant and working in finance, I look at what the take home is. So if you tell me what my salary is, for example, I'm not interested necessarily in the salary. I'm interested in what I will take home at the end of that. And I think everyone else would be exactly the same. So therefore, when you're investing, it's got to be the same consideration. What are you going to take home? Not what, you know, like I said earlier, seeing a 5% yield might be fantastic, but you want to know ultimately what's going to be in your pocket, especially if you're talking like you were earlier about retiring and living off those dividends. You might think, oh, okay, 5% of £100,000, that, you know, I'm going to get £5,000 each year, but actually you're not. You're going to get taxed on that, and what's in your pocket is £3,000. So if you need to live off £5,000, you haven't met your living expenses.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Tax, for me, it doesn't influence the tax, the investment decision, but it is a consideration. It is a major consideration. So no, I think that's good advice.
So what I did when I calculated my strategy, I used these templates on where you can see what the impact of dollar cost averaging is, where you create this curve, yeah, with dividend reinvestment and how the exponential curve grows. And I made one with taxation and without taxation. And I think the difference for me with a 19% tax bracket, assuming that, is around almost a year longer investing to just make up for the impact of the tax on the exponential growth curve. So it's kind of a year. So this means in the end, it's like 10% in duration, a little bit less even. Let's say it's 5 to 6% in duration when it comes to my retirement forecasted date.
But that's a key metric that otherwise you would have missed and actually could have missed your goals.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Exactly. I find it quite important. But I don't make investment decisions. So I always get this question, like, you know, some countries like a 35% tax. And I know that some people are blinded by the tax rate. So they say, like, I don't invest in Switzerland or France because Switzerland is 35%. France is 30%. Actually, for foreigners, 12.8%, but you need to claim it back. I'm not blindsided by that. I look at the investment case like we discussed earlier. So the tax adjusted yield, and that is more important for me. Because there's some, for instance, some really good pharmaceutical companies in Switzerland that are really good for a portfolio. They provide stability, safety, and after tax, they might still yield like up to 3% or something like that. So for me, that is still, when it comes to my investment strategy, that's still a good yield. If you look at it from a yield point of view, with enough growth behind it. And what I also see is that often those countries in high tax, let's say stocks in high tax countries, they usually have it already kind of priced in their share price. That's what I noticed, because also institutional investors have this issue with tax.
Definitely.
Okay, that was awesome. There was some really great advice there. Thanks a million for that. Really appreciate you coming on to give your advice and answer some of our questions.
But no worries. Thanks for having me.
We're just going to move on to our listener questions here. We have quite a few, and some of them are around taxation again. We may or may not be able to answer them, but we'll do our best. So the first question came in from Centrino, and he asked, how come in Belgium, US dividends are deducted 15% tax if you have a WA form, and on top of that the Belgian taxes are 30% to be paid? Is this not double taxation, and why does Belgium refuse to recognize this evidence?
So for me, that's a tough one to answer without looking at if there is a double taxation treaty in effect, and looking at that treaty specifically to see what the ins and outs of it are. I know that the US specifically look at dividend taxation to ensure the funds leaving their shores. So, you know, without looking at a Belgium-US double taxation treaty and understanding if that's in place, I can only speak about what happens in the UK. In the UK, it is very similar, and you will, but again, the reason they have that withholding tax, the dividend withholding tax, is because the money is leaving US shores. You would get 30% if you didn't fill out that WA form, as you mentioned. It doesn't mean that it's not classed as personal income to you in your own jurisdiction, which means that you would be taxed on it. So I get the question. It can seem unfair, but if you bear in mind, it's two different jurisdictions taxing you two different taxes in effect.
Yeah, Ireland works in a pretty similar way to the UK in this sense. We're charged 30%, but if we fill out that duck weight form, it's only 15% at source. So I'm not in a position to comment on Belgium. I honestly, I'm glad you answered that, because I wouldn't even know where to begin.
But Belgium is a bit of a weird country, right? And Centrino and Phil know this, right? They speak French there, Dutch, German, but nobody speaks Belgium because they don't have this language. So I can imagine that everyone is confused there, and probably the tax law reflects this. I think it took them, I think they have kind of, this is one of the countries in Europe where it took longest to form a cabinet, like literally a year or more. I don't know exactly, but yeah. So I'm never surprised with special circumstances in Belgium. It's always Belgium. So
I'm expecting you, EDGI, to get a flood of emails from Belgian citizens now tomorrow.
Of course, of course, of course.
Okay, so we move on to IO charts, and he had two questions. So I'll ask the first one. And the first one is, which industries have lower / no tax requirements for their dividends? I'm not quite sure. In Ireland, I don't think it's industry based. It's just based on dividends as a whole. If I'm getting dividends from a company, it doesn't matter what industry they're in, I'm charged the same amount. I'm not sure what your guys' take on that is.
I don't think there's any difference between industry. It's not differentiated between industry, as far as I'm aware. It's differentiated between tax jurisdiction. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the second question is, how much are the taxes about which exchange the stock is traded on? Or is it purely about where the company is registered? And I think that's to your point, Robin. It is based on jurisdiction, pretty much. Okay. So then Phil asked the question, and Phil is one of our Belgian listeners that EDGI was referencing a moment ago. But he asked, from a European perspective, any signs of unified, simplified European taxation on dividend? I think you answered that earlier.
I was going to say, we touched on that earlier. It's not something I'm aware of. It would be lovely if it did, but I very much doubt they would do that, for the pure fact that you and I know that would be nice and simple, but that's not the way tax works, unfortunately.
It probably cost them more money to do that, which is why they never do it.
Exactly.
And then the last question comes from Claudio, and this is from me, I imagine. I would be very curious about the taxes in Ireland on dividend income and also realized capital gains. So it's pretty simple in Ireland. We are taxed within two tax brackets, and your dividend income is taxed based on which tax bracket you're in. So if you're in the lower level, it's 20%. If you're in the higher level, it's 40%. Capital gains is taxed at 33%. Like we mentioned earlier, there is tax-free of €1,250, and then anything after that is taxed at 33%. So it's not the most tax-efficient way to invest in Ireland. Pensions are probably the most tax-efficient way, but if you want to retire early, you have to make peace with paying tax somewhere along the line. Okay, that's all the questions for today. Thanks a million, guys, as always. Really interesting questions. I'm glad Robin was here to answer some of them, because I don't think I would have been able to answer most of them. So we'll move on to our stock picks, and I get to sit back and relax for this one. It's EDGI's stock pick. But Robin, do you want to have a go of who you would like to suggest maybe as a stock?
So I will confess that this isn't a dividend stock pick. This is more of a growth stock pick. But from my perspective, I've come across Fiverr as a company. They're an Israeli online marketplace that offers freelance services. It's basically a platform for freelancers to offer services to customers worldwide. In the current environment, with everything that's been going on, people opening their own businesses, Fiverr empowers that. So I think it's something that could grow quite big in the coming years.
Is it something that you're using yourself as well?
I've got clients that have used it, and I do have a position myself as well.
Okay, very interesting.
Yeah, I'm quite familiar with Fiverr. I've used them a number of times. And it's quite good. You when at first I remember using them maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and the prices were €5 at the time, which is where the name Fiverr came out of, and you can get logos done or animations done. Now they offer premium services. So yes, they still have the lower cost base, so you pay Fiverr, but if you want the premium level, you can pay anything up, any amount to get these. So it's quite a good service. It's been interesting to watch it grow. I don't have a position in it myself, but as an investment case, I can certainly see why it's attractive. And on to you, EDGI.
Yeah, so it's my stock selection of the week, let's say. It's not a stock that I recommend buying at the moment. I don't think the valuation at the moment is the one that I feel comfortable with, but I would like... It's one really on my list that I would love to have in my portfolio, and the name is Wolters Kluwer. So Wolters Kluwer is based in the Netherlands. You will be able to get it natively, let's say, on the Amsterdam Stock Exchange. And it's a global provider of, I would say, professional information. And maybe, Rob, you know it as well, because they also provide a lot of databases where typically lawyers or accountants go into. These are really expensive licenses that you pay. So we're talking about thousands and thousands of euros to get access to such a database. And this was always a boring company, hardly growing. I remember on a Blue Monday that I even worked for a supplier for this company. I was literally just putting their information into XML formats so that they could use it in a database and then could publish it to CDs or to websites and such. And I could have never seen the upcoming, I would say, big data evolution here. But now on the last, I think since 2015, it really took off this stock because suddenly, because of data science and big data, this company became really interesting because they've been collecting data effectively over probably almost a century. So they have a wealth of information. These are professional databases. And now, I mean, there's so many companies that want to hook up their services to their APIs and such to really do lots of analysis around data science. Yeah. So this company suddenly out of nowhere became really popular. And this is so interesting here about this company. It really started a growth curve. So from a boring company, it suddenly became a growth company. And you can see this, for instance, in the earnings per share. Back in 2015, it was still at €1.42. But before that, it was all the time around, let's say, €1.15, not so much growth. But then it went really quickly up from 1.32 to 1.66 to 21 to 35. And now we're at 2.75, yeah, in a few years. So it really doubled in their earnings power. And this is what I like so much about this company. Unfortunately, the valuation went with it because their price to earnings has really been growing rapidly. And now you get it for a forward PE of 23 at the moment. But the dividend growth has also been really good. So if you think about how the dividend growth was between 2010 and 2015, it was like 1.5% per year. But now due to this earnings growth, they've been growing the dividends quite rapidly. And actually the last year, it was almost 20%. And their payout ratio is kind of staying the same all the time, around 40-50%. So for me, this is actually a really good company that I would love to have in my portfolio. I'm just waiting for a dip here. I would probably like to have it for around, I mean, to dip my toes in the water, around €60. It's currently around €70. So around €60, I might initiate a position. It's now yielding 1.8%. So it's also for me not attractive enough. But this is a company which I think has a lot of potential still in the upcoming years, knowing that data science, machine learning is just at the beginning still.
Nice. Thanks a million for that. So that's it for this week's show. Thanks a million again, Robin. It was great to have you on. And thanks a million to all our listeners again. We appreciate everyone listening to us, and thanks a million for your questions, and we'll see you all next week.